Shalom, I'm Keisha Gallagher with Grace and Torah, and you are watching the fourth Hebrew month, the month of Tammuz. This is a month of transformation. This is a month of spiritual authority being tested in you. We just left the month of Sivan, where we had the mountaintop experience at Shavuot, where the Torah and the Spirit are given, and if they were received, we're going to see what seed is actually growing in your heart or in my heart. That's what Adonai is doing. We are in the wilderness, the Bamidbar. That's where he takes us after the mountain. And that word Bamidbar is a name of a book, Numbers, in the Torah. But it also means in the wilderness. And its root is Devar, word. It's where the word is tested. It's where God speaks, and it's where the word is tested in your heart. But closely akin to that, the devar can be a dever. It can be a pestilence. And we see instances of that happening multiple times in the Torah portions where the people are tested. We have Korach, Hukat, Balak, and Pinchas. All of those portions. Lots of stuff going on where authority is being tested. Now, it's with the leadership that God instituted, the earthly leadership like Moses and Aaron. But what happens when we test those that Adonai has placed in authority? We're actually testing him. We're challenging him. And that's what those Torah portions teach us. So in the fourth month of the fourth year of the Shemitah cycle, so I think this is sort of intensified, this fourth month, is really special. So I'm going to try to link some things together for you. But first, I just want to thank Adonai for the fourth month. Praise you, Father, for a new month. Praise you that we've reached this season. Praise you, Father, that you continue to transform us into the image of Messiah, Father. We thank you for your gifts of your word and your Ruach HaKodesh, Father. And we just pray that you will continue to fill us with the truth so that Egypt is worked out of us, Father. In the name of Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen. If you want the full blessing, you can go to graceandtorah.net. That will have the traditional blessing right under the video in Tammuz video notes. So I'm going to give you a quick overview first. The themes for this month, I've already mentioned transformation, and that happens through heat. Remember, this is the first summer month. And in Israel, the summers are dry and they are hot. It is not like what I've been experiencing outside where the clouds keep coming and the storms keep rolling in and the rain keeps pouring. It's not like that. It's the dry season. This is not the rainy season. So heat and pressure, but heat and pressure are meant to produce those beautiful jewels. And hopefully you are one of those living stones within the house of the Lord, the Bayit. But we can expect, if we're going to become that living stone, to be tested, to be pressured, to have heat. The heat's getting turned up this month. So just be prepared for it. Don't be afraid of it and don't groan and murmur over it. It's not a bad thing. It doesn't have to go horribly. It's just what's in our heart. That's what's going to come out. So our passions, of course, are going to be tested. Our sight, that's the sense for the month, is going to be tested. And what do I mean by that? That's your vision. That's your perception. That's your perspectives. Sometimes they're out of line, just like our vision can be out of line, and it needs to be corrected so that we see clearly. And that leads us to the tribe for the month, which is Reuven. His name means to see, a son, or a son that sees. And hopefully we are all sons that can see. But we also know that Reuven did some things that caused great loss in his life, and we're going to look at that and why that occurred. Our mazel for the month is the Sartan. That is the crab, the cancer. And this is a creature that has a hard shell and he walks sideways. And that's not the way we want to walk. Remember, our sense from last month was walk, our walk, our walking. And if we want to walk properly, we need to walk straight. We need to follow the ways and the cycles of Adonai. And that's why we're making these videos. This is part of his cycles, the new moons, the months are actually governors for those Moedim. And we want to learn as much as we can so that we can serve him to the best of our ability and so that we can also serve one another with compassion and mercy and grace. And that's what this is all about. Now, the fourth month is a lot like the fourth day of creation. So if you want to learn a little bit more about kind of what to expect, go back to Genesis chapter 1 and read about day 4. On day 4, we have the sun, moon, and stars. They're created as governors. They separate the light from the darkness, and this is both physical and spiritual. They mark out the days and the weeks and the months and the years. This is their purpose. And they are always faithful to proclaim his calendar and his clock in the sky. And one of the things that they do is they give. Light always gives. And if we have received in that fourth feast of Shavuot his Torah and his Ruach HaKodesh as one of his fellow servants, you too will also be one that gives light to the earth. And that can be in all the aspects of giving that you can probably think of. Those would be true because a good governor doesn't take, a good governor doesn't lord over, a good governor does not usurp. A good governor is a servant. And that's what true leadership is in the body of Messiah. He was our model and he came as a servant. So if we want to be his image in the earth, that is exactly what we will do. Also in the fourth month, we have the Babylonian name Tammuz attached this month, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. But Tammuz was a Babylonian god of vegetation. What happened at Babel? The people, once again, didn't have the proper authority they didn't have Adonai sitting on the throne of their hearts. So what did they do? They proceeded to make a name for themselves and they built the Tower of Babel. And what was Adonai's response? He confused their tongue, their language, communication. Speech was the sense of our first month, Nisan, back with Passover. Remember, we had speech, then we had thought, then we had walking, and now we have sight or vision. And I want you to think about why he chose to do that. If they couldn't communicate well with one another, they couldn't continue with their dastardly plan, right? That is exactly what happened. And there was a confusion of tongues. At Pentecost, though, we see tongues that are fire. We see a word going forth from Adonai from the mountain that is a fiery word in Israel. It's like the counterpart, basically, to this negative confusion of tongues. So really, he's already rectified that thing, right, with Shavuot. And so the fourth month, we might see communication issues. Pay attention to that, because if things were not rectified and done right or received the way they should have been in the fourth month, then there may be a mirror of that Babel confusion of the tongue happening in the fourth month as well. And what does that come from? Again, this is over authority issues. The first thing that I want to go into a little bit more depth with is the name Tammuz, because I know that that just is like sandpaper to some of you. The fact that the rabbis have left a false god name, Tammuz, attached to the Hebrew months. And I get it. I used to feel the same way. It used to irk me just as much as it probably irks you. And I know you just want to throw that thing in the trash. And I get it. But the more I have dug in, the longer I have kept the festivals, the more I focus on these new moons, the more I realize that there is a very good reason that the rabbis have named or left the Babylonian name Tammuz attached to the fourth month. And it has nothing to do with elevating or exalting a false god. It is more akin to forcing you to look at something, that's that sight again, that might be sitting on the throne of your heart that you don't even realize is there. So I'm going to read a quote to you from Ezekiel, because this is where we find Tammuz in this scripture. It's chapter 8, verses 14 and 15. Then he brought me to the entrance of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north. And behold, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz. He said to me, "Do you see this, son of man? Yet you will see still greater abominations than these." Now I'm going to read a quote to you from Rabbi Ginsburg. This is what he says about Tammuz. "The truth is that how we see our Tammuz depends on whether we wait patiently for Moses to descend from the mountain with the two tablets in his hand, or if we prefer to find a glittery, superficial replacement for him in the form of the golden calf, whose end is more bitter than bitter aloes." So you see that he is also seeing that same dichotomy that we've been looking at. What did we receive on the mountain? Because if we did receive the Torah, if we did receive the Ruach HaKodesh, then we should have some patience in our heart. We should have some understanding. And the children of Israel, we know, they weren't patient and they did build a golden calf. But immediately, even after all of those things, I mean, we start seeing them in the wilderness and it's still authority. It's like Adonai keeps trying to show them what is in their heart. Who rules your heart? Is it Tammuz or is it Adonai? The summer season, when everything is dry and many of the crops have come in, is when we're going to find many threshing floors. And I think that's what's going on starting with the first summer month of Tammuz. Brown Driver Briggs' Hebrew and English Lexicon defines Tammuz as a sprout of life. And that's how I've defined it in my Biblical New Moon book. But we know that he was a deity of food and vegetation, and he was closely linked to fertility worship. There are other resources like the Complete Word Study Dictionary for the Old and New Testaments that associate Tammuz with Ishtar. So we see fertility there. But both of those things are about producing, whether it is crops or it is new human life. And these are false gods. It is putting your hope in the natural order, not trusting the creator, but the creation. It's a perversion. And each of those Torah portions deal with these sorts of things, both righteous and false authority, rebellion, impatience, righteous zeal. And they conclude with Pinchas. And at the end of Pinchas, we see a reiteration of God's government, authority, and sovereignty on the earth reestablished with the offerings on the holy altar and the Moedim, his calendar, his authority. But in the midst of those portions, we see Israel tested. He's going to take them around the land of Edom, and the people start grumbling because of the journey. They grow impatient, and then they start getting themselves all worked up and toward the point to where they are disparaging the manna from heaven. They say, "We loathe this miserable bread," which is just a horrible thing to say. And Adonai took great offense to it, and he sent fiery serpents to bite the people. Now, how was this remedied? How were their bites alleviated? Moses had to make a bronze serpent and put it on a pole and lift it up, and the people had to look at it in order to be healed. And this is exactly why the rabbis have left Tammuz, that name, attached in the fourth month, the month of authority and the month of transformation. It's as if they're forcing you to look at it. Look at what is in your heart or what could be growing there, because sometimes it looks really close to the real thing. And we're going to see that when we start getting more into Korah here in just a bit. There are some traditional things that are associated with the fourth month. One would be the sin of the golden calf. Another would be the walls of Jerusalem were breached on the 17th of Tammuz. That is found in 2 Kings 25, 1 through 21. And it is believed that that is true for both the first and second temples. And so that begins, that 17th of the Tammuz begins the 3 weeks or the dire straits. It's 3 weeks of mourning. And so there's a fast on the 17th of Tammuz. And we read in Zechariah 8:19 that there was indeed a fast of the fourth month. And it's from sunrise to sunset. And it's mourning the destruction of both the first and second temples. And it ends with another fast on Tishba Av. That is the 9th of Av, which is the actual day the temples were destroyed. And also Tammuz is associated with the time that Moses sent the spies out into the land. And of course, we know that 10 of them brought an evil report. And the people chose to believe the words, the negative words of the people, rather than what God had promised them. So let's see how Reuben ties in to all of these themes that we've just talked about. His tribal banner is a man. Sometimes it's a water, and that's based on the blessing that Jacob gave to him, which we'll look at in a minute. But he was one of the tribal heads in the encampments around Israel. There was four tribal heads. They each had two tribes with them, and that's how they encamped around the tabernacle. And this order of the sons is the order of the months, the 12 heads. And he's a tribal head, and he has with him Simeon and Gad. So even in his tribal banner, we're presented with a question, because both a man and water can be a contronym. A man can be the image of Adonai or the image of a beast, and water can be chaotic and destructive, or it can be life-giving, like the Maim Chaim. When Leah conceived and bore Reuben, this is what she says, Genesis 29:32. Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben, for she said, because Adonai has seen, ra'ah, my affliction, oni, surely now my husband will love me. Oni, her affliction, comes from the word ana, and ana is to afflict your soul at the fast of Yom Kippur. But oni means depression, misery, affliction, trouble. And the sense for this month, remember, is sight, and Reuben means to see a son or a son that sees. But the reason he's named that is because Adonai had seen her affliction. And so in light of that, I can't help but go back just a few verses and see how Leah and Rachel are introduced in this chapter. It's 29:16-17. And it says, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. And so why did Leah have weak eyes? And the rabbis associate Leah's eyes being weak because she, of all her many tears, her eyes were puffed up and swollen because she cried continuously because she knew that she was destined to marry Esau. And in tradition, Leah and Rachel are twins, and so they were supposed to intermarry with one another. Esau was for Leah, Jacob was for Rachel, and obviously we know that Esau took other wives, and so this whole plan was disrupted, and this is why Laban tricked Jacob into marrying Leah first. And whether that tradition is true or not, what is important here is that Leah truly did feel affliction. She truly did have tears, and we don't learn about that so much from her conversation, but we learn that definitely in the naming of her children. It was all about her suffering. So in light of that, I have some questions for you, because I think many of us have had weak eyes like Leah. I think many of us have suffered rejection and loneliness and feel like that we've been passed over for another person. I think we felt the sting of a feeling unloved, scorned, or worse. I think many of us have suffered outright oppression and abuse, and cruelty. And these things are great tragedies. And I'm not saying that's what Jacob did. He didn't do those latter things. But still, all of these things produce great tears. It's pain and it's suffering. And I know that every single life has been touched by these things in one way or another. So the tragedies of our life produce many tears that make our eyes swollen and puffy. And if your eyes are swollen and puffy, you can't see as well. And it's not, and I'm not saying it's wrong to cry and mourn and those things. I mean, they are very, very real, but we have to be careful that we don't let them distort our vision. So the lesson, I think, is twofold. On the one hand, we need a reminder that there are hurting people around us everywhere. We need to look, see into the eyes of our brothers and sisters. We don't need to be turning a blind eye, because what would Yeshua do? He would meet them where they are. He would bind up those wounds. He would bring healing. And if we're his image, then we would be doing the same thing. I think often we would prefer to be like Jacob and just deal with Rachel, the beautiful form and face, and thinking that that's the easy way, the issues that aren't so hard to deal with. But the reality is, in the end, we do see Rachel weeping for her children. We do not get to escape pain and suffering. We do not get to escape offenses in this life. They are going to come. But what are we going to do with them? How are we going to handle them? On the other hand, I think we need to learn that weeping may last for a night, but a shout of joy comes in the morning. Hallelujah. That is Psalm 30 and 5. So we don't want to remain in a state of mourning. It's okay to mourn, and it's okay to grieve, and it's okay to cry over our pain and suffering, but we don't want to stay in a place of disappointment, of a deep grief or shame or remorse, because those are pits, and they are the epitome of being a victim. And as we're going to learn here in just a minute, that's exactly what Tammuz was. He was a victim, and that's what they were weeping for. We want to be ones that receive those gifts that helps us to be that overcomer that we're called to be. Because staying in those places, it's dangerous. It brings pestilence. They're contagious and dangerous. So in light of that, I find it intriguing that our mazel for the month is Sartan, is a Cancer. And it's the only zodiac sign or mazel in the sky that has a disease named after it, a horrible disease, cancer. And what is cancer about? Abnormal cell growth. And we definitely want our growth to be healthy. We don't want the abnormal growth, because we even use the analogy with as something being a cancer if it's something that needs to be cut out and removed, right? Bitterness, self-pity, jealousy, selfish ambitions, they're just as dangerous and deadly as cancer. And so is usurping godly authority, because that also brought pestilence. And I'm not necessarily saying that's always in the physical realm, but it's definitely what's happening in the spiritual realm. So in our Torah portion, Korach, that I promised that we'd get to, we have two Reubenites from our tribe for the month, Dathan and Abiram. They join themselves to the Levite Korach in a rebellion against Moses and Aaron. And they also managed to persuade 250 other leaders. So these were leaders over, probably hundreds and fifties and tens. And they actually provoked that many people to join in an attempted coup of Moses and Aaron. And so we know that the result of that was the earth swallowed Korah and Dathan and Abiram, and a fire came out from Adonai, and heat like the summer, and it killed the 250 other leaders. And after seeing all of that take place, the very next day, the people, the congregation, this is what they say. This is Numbers 16, 41 through 42. But on the next day, all the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You are the ones who have caused death on the Lord's people." It came about, however, when the congregation had assembled against Moses and Aaron, that they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. So the people blamed Moses and Aaron for the death of Korah and his company. In other words, they still didn't realize who they were actually challenging. They were challenging Adonai himself. When they turned toward that tent of meeting, which is God's dwelling place in the desert, a plague breaks out and it kills 14,700 people. That's a lot of people. You see the sevens there? There's a sort of a completion. Now, I want you to think about those women that were sitting and weeping for Tammuz, because they were
also at God's dwelling place, which was at his temple. There is definitely an association there. They were weeping and grumbling for an abomination. But what they were really felt like they were doing is they were mourning and grieving over a victim that they considered a hero, like Tammuz. And obviously the people thought this about Korah and his company too. Because Tammuz's life, it was a tragedy, and it was idolized and worshipped through tears. And so there is a very real danger that we will idolize our pain and suffering, that we'll blame it on someone else, and we'll accuse the very leadership that God has put over us in the process. And that's a scary place to be. So we cannot allow our past rejections, hardships, sufferings to confuse or distort our vision of proper godly authority. What the people were doing with Korah is that they were only looking at what their natural eyes could see. Before they died, this is what the sons of Reuben, Dathan and Abiram, said to Moses. We will not come up. Is it not enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness? Do you see how backwards that is? But you would also lord it over us? Indeed, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor have you given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Would you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. I want you to think how distorted their vision is. I think it's very ironic that they are accusing Moses and Aaron of putting out the eyes of these men when in reality they are as blind as a bat spiritually to what's happening. So the sons of Reuben say that Moses brought them out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Where did Moses bring them out from? Egypt. Is Egypt the land of milk and honey? No. But you know what? In the natural, compared to the wilderness, seemed like a pretty great place to them. And they're comparing it to the promised land. But in all fairness, if you think about what had just happened to them, remember, they believed the report of the 10 spies. They had been told that they were indeed going to die out there in the wilderness. They were going to live the rest of their natural lives out there without vineyards, without fields, solely relying upon the Lord, really. If you had been told that that's basically your fate, anyone that comes and is offering a better alternative can sound pretty good. And I think this is how they got the people persuaded to follow after them in trying to usurp Moses and Aaron. I understand what they were doing, but at the same time, I'm thinking, are we doing that in some ways? I hope not. So our Torah portions are really informative. The wilderness is indeed where the word of truth is tested in us. It's hot. It's uncomfortable. It's hard. Things look and feel dry and thirsty and lifeless. But is that the truth? If that's how you feel like your life is right now, I want you to ask yourself, is that the truth? Which eyes are you seeing through? What are we going to believe? Are we going to believe the promises of Adonai, which are often things that we cannot see with our natural eyes? Or are we going to be deceived by the words of a cunning retractor, one that appeals to the very real plot of our flesh, the things that we can look around our life right now and see, okay, yeah, that's what's going on. So if our spiritual vision is limited, or even really tired and worn out or battle weary, we will run to Korah's. We will run to a Tammuz every time. They call it the way they see it, and we agree. So we rebel at the injustice of it all. And before long, we're crying, we're the victim, and it's your fault. And so this is an angry spirit that believes its eyes are wide open, when in reality, it's simply a blind accuser. So do you see why we need to see Tammuz? Why it is very important, especially in this season? So let's go back to Reuben real quick. Sadly, Reuben defiled his father's marriage bed. This was disrespectful and reckless, and it dishonored Jacob, but it also dishonored Adonai. And what did Reuben lose? He lost the honor of having the firstborn's birthright. In Genesis 35:22, it says, "And it came about while Israel was dwelling in the land that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard of it." Genesis 49:3-4, this is Jacob blessing him. This is what he says. "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence because you went up, Allah, to your father's bed, Mishkav, then you defiled it. He went up, Allah, to my couch, Yatzua." Jacob says that Reuben is as uncontrolled and unstable as water. And that Hebrew word is pakaz, and it means ebullition, which is to bubble, to boil, to froth. Can you think of it like a big pot of boiling hot liquid, and how dangerous that can be in the wrong hands? That's Reuben, and it's how he was described. Actually, the root of this word means to be reckless, to be arrogant, to be undisciplined, to be wild and insolent. So what was Reuben ruled by? His lower nature, his nephesh, his passions, his impulses, his appetites. In other words, he wasn't a man, but he was a beast. So in case we miss the theme in the Torah portions or in the number of the month, 4, the tribe of Reuben begs you to look deeper. It begs you to ask once again, who is your real authority? And have we defiled our father's couch or bed? And the prophets scream, yes, we have. So like Esau, another firstborn, Reuben lost the heavenly birthright in exchange for immediate gratification of the flesh. And you know, that's what those people in Korach were wanting. They didn't want to live their natural life out in the wilderness and die there. So he exchanged a moment of satisfaction for an eternity of lost. While Judah received that scepter of leadership, it would be Joseph's sons, Rachel's firstborn, that would receive the birthright. You can read about that in 1 Chronicles 5:1-2. "Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the sons of Israel, so that he is not enrolled in the genealogy according to the birthright. Though Judah prevailed over his brothers and from him came the leader, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph." So now I want you to think about Reuben for a minute. The son that could see. What would cause him to act so arrogantly? And then I want you to think about his mother. He was her firstborn son. Do you think that Reuben could see the affliction and the tears of his mother, Leah? As her firstborn, do you think that he desired for his father, Jacob, to rectify this? Do you think that Reuben might have resented Jacob on account of his mother? I think that's highly probable. Do you think that he found the whole situation unjust or unfair? I imagine that he definitely did. But it still didn't give him the right to defile his father's bed, whether that was in spite or just complete show of his disrespect. It still didn't make it right. It cost him everything. I think that we're terrified that God is not going to come through for us. I think we're horrified that we might have to live an unloved, lonely life like Leah. We can look around our own wildernesses and quite frankly, with what we see with our natural eyes, the future doesn't look good. And so we cry. We weep for our future like Rachel, but this is what the Lord says to her. "Restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work will be rewarded." Do you believe that? There is hope for your future, declares Adonai. And your children will return to their own territory. Do you believe that? Do you believe there's hope for your future? That's Jeremiah 31. This is probably a good month to read about those promises when things get hard and hot and dry. Read Jeremiah 31. Read Zephaniah 3. There's many, many places in the prophets where though there's horrible things and judgments, there is hope for your future. Believe the promise. Don't focus. Don't use these eyes to focus on your tragedies and heartbreaks. Because at its core, that's what the worship of Tammuz is. It's the worship of tragedy. And guess what? It's your tragedies. So who are you really worshiping? A man, an idol. So again, can you see the authority issues? There is good news though. Even Moses had some good news for Reuben. This is what he said in his blessing. This is Deuteronomy 33:6. Let Reuben live and not die, and let his men be numbered or counted. That's a great blessing. Because everything we've looked at, that's exactly what we don't want, is to die. The flesh doesn't want to die, but it has to die. It has to die. It's a death unto life. It's Egypt being pressed out of us, and it's a good thing. This is truly training ground. So what warfare might we expect to happen this month? If this is the month of transformation, a transformation means a thorough or dramatic change in form or appearance. Think about those senses we've been going through in the months. Your speech, your thought, your walk, and your vision must be radically altered. And hopefully that's exactly what's going on. And that's what the spring feast that culminate with Shavuot in the third month at the mountain. That's what they're meant to do. They're spiritually meant to recreate you every single year, transforming you into the image of Messiah. So don't fight that process. Don't mumble and complain over that process. Egypt has to be pressed and sometimes even burned right out of us. And it's hard and our flesh hates it. But I pray that Adonai gives you eyes to see that you are in process and that there is great hope for your future. This month, carefully consider and look for the authority in your heart. What is your focus? Whatever you focus on, you're probably talking about, and that's because that's what's in your heart. Offices of authority, expect them to be challenged. Expect those that want to usurp it, to slander it, to try to kick the legs out from under ministers. That's what people like to do in this time when they are feeling the pressure and the heat. So look for things that are going to come up against leadership. Be mindful and cautious about your own grumbling and complaining and longing for the familiar, the distorted things that we know about Egypt and Babylon, because you were brought out of that. You are a peculiar people. Their normal is not your normal. And that's good. If you have emotions that are boiling and frothing, get on your knees and repent. They only lead to losing eternal things for a moment of earthly pleasure or reprieve. So may you live and not die. Don't grow impatient in the wilderness. Adonai's testing and training ground. Don't grow impatient on waiting on Yeshua to return. He will return at the exact right time. Impatient hearts always produce golden calves. Remember that. Don't use this time to size up your neighbor. If that's what we're looking at with this spiritual authority thing, then it reveals that you consider yourself the judge or authority. That's a Tammuz. Be particularly compassionate. Look at your neighbors. See them. Be merciful and compassionate and loving and understanding. Especially if they're in pain or they're struggling. We need to guard our eyes, what we're perceiving, what we're allowing to come in to our sight. And we need to make sure that what's there is good and holy and proper. We don't want to fall in love with being a victim. You are an overcomer. Tears blur our vision. Let them flow and only be cleansers to release burdens. Don't allow tears of jealousy or selfishness to cloud or blur your vision. And know that God really, really does see your affliction. He knows, and He loves you, and He has good things and hope for your future. Also remember the breach in the walls of the temples, their destruction, and why they were destroyed. The first one was on account of idolatry, and the second one was on account of baseless hatred against brothers. That means it's only going to be rectified when we have baseless love, unmerited love toward our brothers and sisters. And so I'm going to leave you with Psalm 119:18. Open my eyes, Adonai, that I may behold the wonders of your Torah. May you have a very blessed Tammuz, the blessed fourth month. I'll see you next time. Thanks.